the session was billed, as you may recall, as a kind of a conversation with Joe.
Oh, damn.
Thank you. And the reason for that was really that Joe would actually, knowing the kind of work that we do in the Early Geography Department, would actually start a debate around some of the things that we do, particularly around thinking spatially. And what Joe's done effectively in the previous paper is problematise the notion of territory. And in my view, come up with a very interesting Deleuzean take that says basically most of us have kind of got Deleuze wrong in terms of the way we think about territory. So using the example of the GLA and the notion of those kind of technologies actualising a notion of territory, is it the process of Joe's thought there? It's exactly the kinds of things that we've been doing in the department for a good 20-odd years, in a sense, around concepts of territory, scale, network, and place. And all of those, for geographers, are problematic terms. And whilst we may use the same term in the same room, there'll be about 7 or 8 different takes on what place means and what space means. And in a sense, Joe's kicked it off around territory. Joe also referred to a paper which some of you may know by Bob Jessop, Neil Brenner, and Martin Jones. Is that a Southland Society in Spencer? Mm-hmm. And this paper is the most hubristic, hubristic, lovely word, isn't it? Yeah? Which after hubris is an attempt. It's an attempt to put all those terms into one paper. So it has a matrix of territory, scale, network, and place. It says we can fit them all in, and they can all actually kind of relate to one another in a particular way. And I read it, and I thought, it's the idea that you can seamlessly kind of fold in concepts one into the other in some kind of eclectic morass. And I'm not against eclecticism, but some things go with some things, and some things don't. And our paper is an attempt partly to engage with the notion of scale within geography, because scale has been intimately related, often in an unreflexive way, with territory, as in bounded senses of territory, bounded senses of scales. Our argument is, to cut a long story short, is that you shouldn't start with scale. It's the wrong place to be. In a sense. Now we go through that in a particular way, but we start, let's say, with Neil Brenner's New State Spaces. Some of you may know that book, and what's his particular concern within that book is with sub-national spaces, and he thinks sub-national spaces, regional, local, city regions, are particularly useful arenas to think through the way in which the state has been restructured, reassembled in particular ways. He thinks there's a reconfiguration of the state's power. It doesn't simply work in a straightforward top-down way. He thinks there's been a spatial reconfiguration, which you can see best through sub-national spaces, the regions. Now, he's particularly concerned in that sense to think about notions of downscaling. So he's talking about devolution in particular and decentralisation of the space powers. But he's also thinking of rescaling, the way in which local authorities, regional agencies can jump to the European level. So the sense in which institutions can jump above the national, or the way in which powers are devolved, decentralised down, but not in a straightforward way. Now, he talks particularly about the recalibration of scale. And this, some of you will know, has been a debate that's been going on within geography for some time now, and it's divided people between those who want to rescue scale. So scale is no longer a simple thing that goes down from the global to the national, to the regional, to the local, in a very simplistic way. Scales now are overlapping, superimposed. interpenetrating. There is a mosaic of scales. Now at this point I'm completely lost. We're no longer sure in this case what that language is doing in terms of trying to rescue scale. The other side of that debate is a human geography without scale. And instead of a notion of a hierarchy of scales, a group of people want to come up with a notion of a horizontal, kind of flat ontology they talk about. I won't go into that, it's a debate, particular debate within geography. But for us, trying to think through where Brenner's starting from, trying to rescue scale, and the way in which he's coming up with the mosaics of scales, the kind of the overlapping scales, it's almost overstretched the notion of scale, so it's no longer explaining very much at all. In our view, we didn't want to engage with that notion, that debate of scale, but start from another place. And one of the limitations we felt of the notion of scale and the way it's used, is, and this is still there regardless of what you do to the notion of scale, when you're thinking through the state's powers in particular, there's a conflation in Brenner's argument and a lot of Bob Jessop's work as well, between an institutional hierarchy of the state's powers. I forgot about that. The sense in which there is a state that actually institutionally can determine through decision-making powers and practices what goes on elsewhere. And a scalar hierarchy. So you have this sense of an institutional hierarchy and a scalar hierarchy, and the two are put together. Now, there's nothing intrinsic about an institutional hierarchy that is the state to say that it has to be scalar or above. When you put those two together, somehow the state becomes above the rest of society. Now, for geographers, that's seen in terms of their ability to spatialise claims of authority over a given territory. So you have authority over an area, a delimited area, and it's above. And that notion of the state being above is by and large intrinsic to those who kind of go along with a sense of scale. So you're global, national, regional, local, coming down an institutional hierarchy that's spatially structured. You put the two together. Now, we argue in the paper that was circulated that what we think the state has is not so much height, but reach. And reach isn't necessarily horizontal, but we want to preserve the notion of an institutional hierarchy of state powers, but without thinking that that comes down a spatial hierarchy too, that somehow the state is above us. And part of this argument, we won't go into the detail here, is rehearsed in anthropology by the work of James Ferguson and Akhil Gupta, who argue that effectively the state as something above us is a reification of the kinds of practices that go on. Now, their argument is in relation to India. They wish to argue that what effectively the state does is create the illusion and appearance of a hierarchy through a bundle of practices which are essentially local. The problem with their argument, we won't go into it now, is that effectively the state only becomes local. You lose everything else. You lose the sense of an institutional hierarchy in that kind of argument. Joe mentioned the work of Timothy Mitchell, which relates to this, and his idea that the state is an effect. The state being above us in this case is an effect of certain social practices, those social practices being the institutional hierarchy itself or surveillance practices. But by effect, Joe talked about it, talked about the notion of effectuates. This is, in a sense, it's very close to Timothy Mitchell's argument, that the state is not something that's above us. That's a reification. But it doesn't mean to say that there is not an institutional hierarchy. It's just not a spatial hierarchy in that kind of argument. And what we've tried to do in the paper is think through how one would get across an argument that works through reach, not height. We draw upon topological notions to actually kind of convey that point. Now, the distinction that can be drawn between topology and a lot of what the arguments around territory, not the one that Joe was making in this particular case, is you get a distinction between topological and topographical, or geometric and topological. But we're less keen on drawing that distinction because topology is a form of geometry. You have to be quite careful here. But what people who, and this goes back to the paper that was talked about in the Jessup Brenner Jones one, is that they are only thinking, when they try to put together territory and network or scale and network, they are only thinking in topographical terms. So a network is a set of measured, in a sense, measured connections. You can map it. They're lines on a map, these networks. It's a kind of Castells version where things move through. So they are, in a sense, they can relate to one another. When you're thinking in topological terms, physical distance itself, stress physical distance, is not a good indication. Not a good indication of separation or of proximity. In topological terms, distant powers are rarely that. And it is that notion of physical distance not being a good indication of separation or proximity that means you can't just saying networks are topological, as some people do within geography. It's not a misnomer, but it kind of misses the point that most networks are geometric and are topographical rather than topological. As soon as you start to think through the state's powers in topological terms, you come to that last point, which I'll end on before I pass over to Alan. The powers of state are not so much above us, as more or less present through mediators and real-time connections. Some direct, others more distanciated. And the kind of vocabulary, because we're trying to come up with a vocabulary in topological terms that doesn't draw on the Deleuze and Guattari's notion of fate spaces being folded in, or spaces being twisted or bent, or in the given sense of distanciation stretched. Just thinking through reach, but not reach in the sense of simple spatial extension. When people talk about the state's far-reaching powers, it doesn't simply mean the idea of powers radiating out from vital as a form of spatial extension that can be measured as light or as lines on a map. It's talking about the ability to reach into other areas through successive mediations, the ability to draw others within close reach, which Alan's going to talk about now, through real-time connections and relations to similar domains.
I also get to talk about map. This is our map. John and I have a map, which makes us feel secure. And there it is. But of course, it shouldn't really make us feel secure because it actually highlights some of the things that we are trying to talk about. This is a map of the southeast as created by not the government offices that Jill pointed to, but by the Sustainable Communities Plan, which identifies a series of growth regions. And these are the two growth regions, big growth regions, North Kingston, South Midlands, London, Southsea, Cambridge, Thames Gateway, and there's also a little dot around Ashford. And what's interesting about those is that in terms of defining a region, these cross all sorts of supposedly regional boundaries created through the sorts of territorial calculations of PSA 7. Milton Keynes and South Midlands covers areas of the east of England, the east Midlands, and the southeast. London Stansted, Peterborough covers London and the east of England. The Gateway covers London, the east of England, and is back to the southeast. So it's an interesting set of different ways of understanding. And actually what I think is exciting or interesting about this is the way in which even in public policy there is an attempt, well, there's a recognition that the borders don't break, that actually something is happening, that there are relationships which don't quite fit. What happens is that you actually get very clearly when you begin to think about the Southeast, which is what we've used as our empirical case study, you immediately are confronted with the difficulties of scale hierarchy. This is a super region, London and the South East. It includes three or four of the government regions. And actually, in much writing in geography and elsewhere, it's not just a super region, but it is by implication, because it's a super region, not really a proper region. In many respects, it fits the categorizations of city region and the definitions that people use much better than some of the other places that are defined as city regions, but it doesn't count because it's so big and it actually hangs together and it dominates. And I think what's interesting for us is the way in which this is a process of political construction. This is constructed as a growth region, just as now one might argue it's the driver of recession. I mean, it's actually quite the politics so far has been about constructing our own growth. I'm looking forward to the next iteration, which presumably will be constructing it around why we're terribly disadvantaged and all the money should come from Newcastle for the capitalists. Which is, of course, why Northern Rock was nationalised. I think what's interesting, one of the things that we talk about in the paper, I'll try not to go on too much about this, but is a way in which the South East has become regionalised in different ways. It's a governing region, it's a city region. Within that, it's also the government office that Joel talked about and showed us a picture of, is also a part of a region. And it's the only, if you like, the only, remarkably maybe, the only government office region which is somehow smaller than the city region. Every other one is, of course, bigger than the city region. So that's quite interesting in terms of the way they have to work it. So there's a double game, a triple game, all sorts of games going on here in the politics. They're beginning to talk also about how patterns of division, there's a wonderful patterns of division matter within the South East. There's a wonderful series of writing about how the coastal regions of the South East are in a bad state and therefore need to be given more support. So they're actually playing the game of the regions in much the same way as Joe was outlining. Actually, what happens is there's a politics of the regions which is a political process of defining territory as well as scale. So what happens, I think, that we're arguing is that regional politics, this is a regional politics with a geographical imaginary which intersects with political agendas that lift out and re-embed parts of the national and the global to justify their own position, and it be part of the local. This comes out of the sustainable community plans. I think the sustainable community plan is quite interesting because of the way in which, using the term of reach, it actually reaches out to a whole range of different agencies in terms of the circulation of priorities, negotiation and so on. One of the other things we talk about in this paper and indeed in another paper that we've prepared is trying to think about the role of external consultants in all this process. In many ways, these aren't big consultants, but what they are and what they do, I think, is quite important in thinking about what we've been talking about in terms of making up assemblages. They actually play a part of being, they reflect back what they're told and construct and negotiate in order to create ways of thinking about particular spaces and places, which they can then refer to the national level or which even construct alliances locally and regionally. And we've got lots of examples of where that happened. I mean, if you look at this plan in Milton Keynes, for example, there's a community plan. Four different consultancies were involved at various times in developing this community plan. None of them came up with the right answer until the final one, and as soon as they came up with the right answer, that was okay. And they had gone out and talked to various stakeholders, listened to various stakeholders, put together something based on what various stakeholders had said, and reflected it back. Constructing it not in terms of... and this was a negotiated settlement, if you like, which was supposedly agreed by everybody. We've also got in the regional economic strategy, I think it's quite interesting, the process of scenario planning, which is much loved by many of us at the Open University, but which is done by the St Andrews Business School consulting arm, which identifies four different scenarios for the future of the South East. None of them, it has to be said, reflecting on the collapse of the City of London, but that's okay. And surprisingly enough, the one that is chosen by the regional economic strategy to take forward is the one that says that London and the South East should really be a leading world region, and the RDA should lead on making sure that it is. And as far as the coastal area is concerned, another local consultants, SQW, based in Cambridge, have been drawn in to produce that. And these are all about bringing things together, making the sorts of appeals, cutting across, making different sorts of reach. What I think is interesting is that what we end up with is a situation where many of these are basically lodged in space, but actually there are really, and I think it's quite important to understand this, there is no set of finalised government arrangements. That's something that I think is quite important. There's a whole set of frustration from the central government and elsewhere because no particular set of arrangements seems to stay in place. We're seeing the end of the regional assembly soon. We've seen the creation of something called Communities England, or it'll be coming at the end of the year, which is taking over the role of some of things like English partnerships. We've seen within, for example, within Milton Keynes and the South Midlands, a plethora of different sorts of local arrangements which are supported by English partnerships. Urban development companies in Corby and North Northamptonshire, urban development corporations in West Northamptonshire, that might be a shock to some of you, so you think urban might be something urban, and notions of partnership in Hunting, which are rather different. All of this is going on, and what's happening, I think, and what we want to draw attention to is the process of negotiation, accommodation, sometimes resistance or challenge, as a continuing one. In other words, just because the arrangements aren't determined through a scalar hierarchy, that doesn't mean they're horizontal or flat, but rather that they have uncertain and changing contours. In this context, we draw on Charles Tilly's work to point to the possibility of polyvalent politics, polyvalent performances, the regional as national, the national as regional, the international and global, but also local, for example, regeneration and deprivation and so on as regional issues. This is a process which these things are going on. I think our argument here, and this is echoing something that John already said, is that seeing any of this as a multi-scalar socio-spatial configuration, which is the way that I think the Brenner and others were doing, adds nothing. In other words, instead of the imposition of a scalar imaginary helping us to understand what's going on, it actually does the opposite, because it starts from the template, then imposes it, rather than looking at the challenges that are presented by the processes that we're trying to understand. And what we would want to argue is that what's important is to focus on sets of tangled and cross-cutting relationships that make up the regional assemblage. A more or less ordered assembly of political actors performing the region, but not above and below, so it's not about those sorts of scales. We want to argue, as John has suggested, that reach, not height, is the issue. But what do we mean by that? It means that central government agencies and private consultants are engaging directly through a mix of far-reaching and proximate models of interaction. That's what's happening in the processes. So what we're talking about is institutional, not scalar hierarchies, and John's talked about that, so I won't go on about it. But what is important is that the powers of reach enable them to be more or less present in the region. These are not separate from, but part of. And what we've talked about, what we've tried to identify and talk about, is the notion of institutional powers of reach. And we've identified, for our purposes and in this paper and elsewhere, three ways of thinking about that. Reaching out, which is through the circulation of priorities, targets and funding, and I've talked a bit about some of that in terms of the Sustainable Communities Plan. But it's reaching out beyond the region as well to shape events that are within. So it's not just something that's necessarily done by government, central government. There's other government agencies, other agencies are able to do it again. Circulation of priorities. So Harriet Balkley's talked about this in the context of climate change, and climate change cities coming together to draw in different priorities and targets, reaching out to do that. More directly, drawing within close reach those that are able to broker and influence decisions. And this, it seems to me, for example, is the role of the consultants that we talked about, to counter central government or to reinforce particular strategies. Once this begins to get opened up, it's difficult actually to control, as we go on to say. And then we talk about, finally, reaching into the politics of the region to steer and constrain agendas. This is a way in which a whole range of central, local and regional government agencies are lodged in the city region. There's a whole series of new organisations, new institutions, new structures which are there, including part private and part public organisations. So this, it seems to us, can be looked at as something that's rather messy and a lattice-like pattern of political negotiations and diverse capabilities, or a series of intersects between polyarchic institutions, one set of political lines of decision-making crossing another set of lines operating in a topological fashion. Different bits and pieces of institutional authority are drawn within reach of each other. In this context, it's this sense that I think it's really important to make the point about the way that power and authority isn't so much seeping away from the corridors of Whitehall as being subject to negotiation. Once we begin to get involved in the sort of embedded politics of the region, we're using the region, but we're hoping to develop this city as well, you begin to see how this process begins to undermine straightforward notions of scalar and, to some extent, institutional hierarchy. But it's about renegotiation rather than an end of that, an end of institutional hierarchies. So the key point, I think, for us is that there are state hierarchies, but they work through reach, not height. Central government isn't, in some scalar sense, higher. There's not a national scale which is somehow higher than the other scales. But nor do we need to move to some horizontal alternative, which is one of the possibilities that John touched on. But again, I'm not going to go into that too much here either. But we don't think it's necessary to do that. But rather, what we think is important is to try to trace the different lines of authority, negotiation, engagement, and how they crisscross one another in terms of their distinctive rhythms and spatial practice. Assemblages, in this sense, become unstable power formations in the making. And we, you know, in a way, this is the beginning rather than the end of a project to try and trace those things. But that's actually, that's where we...